Near the site of my fall, a homeless woman rummaged through a dumpster, doubled over its edge like an ostrich with its head buried in the sand, black legs and bare feet poking out from her pink pleated dress. Hearing me groan, she slipped out of the container's mouth, lowered its lid, and walked toward me. I was already propped up on one of my knees, adjusting the strap on my sandal, when she asked if I was all right and offered to help. Only then did I notice that she was a cross-dresser with fine curly hair covering her thighs and sculpted arms. I said I was all right, thank you. I just needed to sit down for a second. She watched me with interest as I eased myself onto the nearest stoop and, although she looked like she might want to lean over and help, kept a safe distance. Her beautiful face was covered in a thick icing of grease, and her smile, filled with white straight teeth, seemed more improbable on her than the women's clothing she wore so naturally. I assured her that I was fine, and she didn't insist. Instead, she headed in the direction of Avenida Osvaldo Araña, her legs gently crisscrossing like a girl in a bikini stepping toward the pool at her boyfriend's pal's house. I moved my ankle around, checking for torn tendons. I was scared to look at my phone again because doing so would confirm the news that just a few hours earlier, Andre had been shot by a mugger someplace close to where I sat, and was now dead at the age of 36. So I calculated, remembering he was just 3 years older than me. The step I had sat on was covered in burned matches, and the thought that they might have been lit by Andre's murderer, a crack fiend ready to kill for a hit, sent a chill through me, followed by nausea. Pearls of sweat formed behind my ear and ran down my neck. I wondered what had happened to my city while I had been away, which was ridiculous, considering that just minutes earlier it had seemed to me that nothing at all had happened, that it was the same city it had always been. It was probably then, in those few mystifying moments, that I was struck by the thought that these days were simply the gateway to a slow and irreversible catastrophe, or that the force, the natural law or entity that gave life to our expectations, and by our, I mean my expectations, those of my friends, my generation, was starting to die out. It was my first trip to Porto Alegre in almost 2 years. I had arrived a week earlier, filled with memories of a breezy, colorful town, trapped in the amber of spring days, tinted by blue skies and the flowering pink trumpet trees of Parque da Redenção. Memories that were undoubtedly real, and yet pointed to a past both indistinct and disconnected from the present. Throughout that week, the city, carpeted in filth and sizzling under the heat of the worst summer in decades, had reminded me of a hepatitis patient left to die in the sun. Cars and people steered clear of the streets on that final day of January, school vacation in full swing and Carnival just around the corner, and the municipal transport strike, which was on the fifth consecutive day of its shutdown, was the final component in a bell jar of lethargy that had descended over everything. Workers in the city's outskirts cried into news cameras that they couldn't get to work, and their bosses were docking their pay. Jitneys, school vehicles authorized by the city for emergency use, and illegal buses that seemed like they might fall to pieces at any moment sped down empty bus lanes crammed with heat-stricken passengers. Cabbies honked their horns and wreaked havoc willy-nilly, high on the overdose of passengers, some even charging night fares in the light of day just because they could.